Welcome everyone to First Bite, brought to you by Pride of Detroit, prideofdetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. I'm Chris Lemieux, at Adequate Host, the master of ceremonies here, as always, keeping this stuff fresh and lively for you. We're bringing you a very special episode of First Bite here with Ryan Matthews, as always, at Ryan underscore POD, and Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader at Detroit on Lion. And it's not about any Lions game. We had retired the First Bite for that, but it is Super Bowl week, and we were just kind of bored here on a Thursday night, and we're thinking, you know what, we should probably talk about this game, and we should talk about some other Lions stuff, too, that kind of crossed our news desk while we were sitting here.
We're back, guys! First Bite! Get excited!
Season's back.
Season's back for one more game, and then Lions, let's not talk about what happens after that.
No, it means the Lions season's back, right, Ryan? We're playing this on Sunday, right?
It's going to be a triple threat for the Lombardi Trophy.
We're cashing in the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yes, oh, boy. Don't get started now.
Hey, I kept it both football and wrestling-ish. Turning over a new leaf. First, it was dropping Butterfingers, which is kind of ironic. But let's keep it football.
You don't want to drop Butterfingers. You don't want to drop Butterfingers. You don't want to drop Baby Ruth's.
5-second rule.
What would a three-team football game look like?
I don't know. I don't know, but you're gonna come closest to seeing it tonight, or you're going to be listening to this tomorrow, but watch that 30 for 30 for the XFL, because that's the closest you'd ever get to a triple threat football match.
We will be talking at some later podcast about the this was the XFL 30 for 30 that was on Thursday night, and I hope you watched it, because I have very fond memories of that dumb, stupid league. It was very formative for myself being a football fan.
It was very bad football, but and it was pretty awful entertainment. But for some reason, it has some sort of charm. I don't know.
I think bad football has its charm. I mean, I watch arena football all the time. It has its charm. But we're here to talk about what is supposed to be good football. Although the way this NFL postseason has gone, I don't know if I can say that I really trust the Super Bowl to be good football, because I'm kind of going on the law of this shit will get fucked up, because we have two very good offenses.
My favorite law.
We have two very good offenses coming into this game, and I'm just saying, usually that means it's going to be a low scoring affair and you'll probably fall asleep.
See, you're falling into the trap that a low-scoring game is boring, which I don't adhere to, that theory. Although I like that theory maybe a little more than the theory of everything's gonna get fucked up shit. I don't know what you just said, but
but it's your favorite theory. How do you already forget it?
You're right. But no, I'm actually pretty excited about this game. I am a little weary that the playoffs up to this date have been really, really bad, but I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast. This is what I think are the two best teams in the NFL, and it's a matchup that you don't get to see very often. I don't know the last time the Falcons played the Patriots. So I'm actually pretty excited for this one.
I'm rooting so heavily for the Falcons. I could not stomach see another Patriots victory for a multitude of reasons that I will not get into. But
we can get into them. We can absolutely get into them. This is what the space is here for.
We really shouldn't, because most of them have a political leaning, but I've already gotten into them, and now my foot is messy and disgusting, and go on with your point, Chris.
Well, since you won't get into them, I will.
I am not rooting
for any team that has Trump's people all over it. Folks, the Patriots, I love the Patriots. They have always been my favorite team in the whole world. The folks, Tom Brady, he is the best, folks. The best. He's the best it's ever been. I don't know of anyone who has been like him. Folks. I can't have that. And I can't have a bunch of Boston people happy about an outcome to this game. So and you know what? I'm all in on the Falcons. I like the Falcons.
Was that your Bill Belichick impression?
Is my Donald Trump really that bad? Don't do
needs
that
a little
me.
Bit of work. Just a little bit. Okay. Some fine tuning. Okay.
But to me, that this is also why the game is intriguing to me, is because political nonsense aside, I think there's a pretty clear, like, good versus bad storyline going on here, right? Like, no one likes the Patriots. outside of Boston. Everyone's sick of them. Everyone wants to call them cheaters for right or for wrong. And the Falcons are this brand new team to the Super Bowl that's only been there once, never won it. Like, that's, it's good that's, versus evil. That's, this is a great storyline already.
This, I think, is kind of fascinating, though, because usually when we're in the midst of a dynasty like the Patriots, usually it's not the underdog that gets this kind of love. It's the dynasty. People want to see greatness. People want to gravitate around it. And yet, for various reasons, like the mechanics of supporting a dynasty have been destroyed through various means, because people were oversaturated with Deflategate, and people were oversaturated with the Boston sports mentality just gumming up everything, and people have been oversaturated with the political stuff, because Tom Brady very knowingly put a Make America Great Again hat in his locker, and then has spent the last 4 months being like, what? Me? Golly, gee shucks, I don't know anything about this, I'm just focused on the game. No, you put that cap for there for all of us to see. You know what you did. Like, and I don't know. I don't know how to read the kind of take on it. But yeah, no, I see more people out there going for Atlanta, I feel like, sometimes. It's still split, though. It's still split. I think people, the problem is that I think people don't know as much about Atlanta because they're not used to watching a Falcons game, right?
Yeah, I don't see it as very, I don't know. I don't see it as one-sided as maybe Jeremy does. I don't think that everybody is going to be rooting for the Falcons necessarily, because I've already heard a lot of people stir up the narrative of, well, hey, maybe the Patriots can win and it'll be a nice way to send Tom Brady off into the sunset like he's going to retire, which I don't foresee anything like that happening, because he clearly still has a lot of good football in the tank.
Didn't we do this with Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan? We were like, all right, they're going to win this last big one, and then they're just going to ride off. And what happens? They just kept going.
Well, yeah, the Spurs are just a basketball machine, and maybe the Patriots are too. And I mean, clearly from watching the first, you know, four games of the season where they had their backup quarterback and then the backup to the backup quarterback, you know, lead them to a 3-1 record. Maybe Brady isn't all that essential to the Patriots machine, and it could be a situation where, you know, just like in the Spurs, you know, Duncan leaves, well, you have somebody come in like Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, you have all these guys, and your machine is just going to keep going because of the guy who's, you know, leading it and heading it up in Popovich. You might have the same scenario going on in New England with Belichick.
I definitely think there's something to that, but I also think Brady is probably not even a couple years away from retiring. I'm also somewhat convinced that when Brady retires, he's going to somehow take the entire league with him, because he doesn't want this league to succeed without him, because I'm sure he hates more than anything in the world most of the politicking that goes on in the NFL. So if he could somehow, you know, kamikaze the league right before he leaves it, he would do it.
See, and this is the part that I hate, because we keep talking about, it's like, oh yeah, it's about more people going with the Falcons, yet all we can keep talking about is the Patriots. I don't know. Like, I mean, someone stole Kyle Shanahan's notebook. Even that gets tied back to the Patriots, though.
Accidentally, and it was returned, right?
Yeah. I just,
it was returned with a bunch of threats in it.
Jesus. Yeah.
I want to talk about the Falcons more, and they certainly deserve
it.
They have
the MVP.
I mean, not unofficial, but yeah, they have the MVP. They have the best wide receiver in the league. They have one of the best pass rushers in the league. And they're a very highly entertaining team to watch. They've got what I view as a pretty awesome fan base and a rabid fan base right now. And, you know, they're that underdog story that I think all Lions fans can relate to. It's just they don't stir the pot as much as the Patriots, and that doesn't drum up a lot of awesome narratives.
It's funny you say rabid fan base, because that is a word I don't think anyone applies to Atlanta sports fans for anything other than University of Georgia football. Like, it's not, like, I think That I think kind of mars it a little bit for some people. Like, I saw something, I read Deadspin, I'd read Drew McGarry. Drew McGarry every week for his Jamboree. He put out a really good one this week. but he was his Greg Easterbrook Memorial Haughty Dipshit of the Week award went to some Boston sports writer who was basically like, "Oh, Atlanta, yawn. They're beneath us." And take out the Boston part, there is still a kernel of truth in that most people are like, "Oh, it's a team from Atlanta."
Well, I mean, you kind of get that complex, like, you know, that complexity by being a team that's so good for so long, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely Atlanta is coming in as this outsider. It's just, I think people are really struggling to, like, last year we had the outsider with the Carolina Panthers, but there was a story to it. The biggest story to the Atlanta Falcons that have sold, because this is how sports work, we sell this on narrative. The biggest narrative for the Atlanta Falcons is Kyle Shanahan's going to be the coach of the 49ers. Like, I'm looking at ESPN.com right now, NFL site. Their top headline right now is Kyle Shanahan's task to rebuild the 49ers. Like, this is, but I think that's kind of a bit of advantageous, is that this is kind of the team that people forgot.
Yeah, it's true, and even with their MVP probably winner, Matt Ryan, it's like he's a guy that just doesn't move the needle that much, right? Like, he doesn't say anything interesting. His style of play is fine, but it's fairly like mechanical, like robotic almost. Like, there's nothing flashy about the way he goes about his business.
No, there certainly isn't anything flashy. It's like all in the weapons that he has, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Matt Ryan, but I mean, he heavily relies on Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman and Julio Jones. All of these guys are what make the big plays happen, essentially. But there's something interesting with the dynamic of comparing this Super Bowl to last year's Super Bowl. Carolina Panthers, another team from the South who doesn't, who doesn't really have much of an identity, I guess. But then you had Cam Newton, who's infinitely more interesting than Matt Ryan. On the surface level, absolutely. And I mean, they were both the MVPs. They were both taking on like elite quarterbacks that are going to be enshrined in the Hall of Fame one day, like Peyton Manning last year and Tom Brady this year.
Yeah, they're taking on football royalty. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So there's some interesting, there's some interesting things that kind of tie these two Super Bowls together. Why there isn't really... there isn't really a narrative emerging from, I think, the player storylines. You know, we keep on getting this emphasis thrown back onto Kyle Shanahan going to, you know, join the 49ers and everything. I don't want to say that it's like, you know, due to Cam Newton and kind of this drumming up of like the whole, like, you know, black quarterback versus white quarterback thing. But I think that there's something to that from last year that was drummed up by, you know, certain sections that kind of turned into like a big narrative, because that was huge last year. Like, let's not ignore that, because it was the thug versus football royalty, remember?
Right, right. And it wasn't even that it was Cam Newton was black or anything. It's that we had kind of a sports-wide conversation about just kind of the code words we had been using about black quarterbacks. Like, it got thrust into your face, and it was a conversation across sports media that you just couldn't escape.
No, you
like,
couldn't.
Like, it was there.
Yeah, yeah, from interviews that they were doing prior to the game, where Cam Newton was wearing a hoodie, but Peyton Manning was wearing a suit, and those kind of things being pointed out and linked to like who they are as individuals and labeling them as such. And I don't know, there isn't anything, because, you know, Cam Newton is just such a more dynamic personality, I guess. Like, he's so much more like bombastic, and he's willing to speak his mind and everything.
And it really helps you that the Panthers were just winning that much. But I think your point is more core, is that there was more personality. There was something you could sell. There was an angle you could sell to the Panthers that just aren't there about the Falcons. The Falcons were a good team that went 11-5. Their defense wasn't that great through the season, and then they just mollywalloped everyone they met in the playoffs.
Right, and the Panthers almost went undefeated, so they had that storyline going for them. They had the MVP, and they were playing Peyton Manning, who was assuredly retiring. Like, that was his last game.
Yeah.
So that I think that was why that Super Bowl has just had a whole lot more intrigue than this one has.
And that's kind of why I'm kind of dreading it, because there's a more than 0% chance the Patriots win, and the Patriots are just sucking up everything about the talk leading up to this. Everything about the Super Bowl has been about the Patriots. Whether it be about Deflategate, which still won't go away, and everyone's tired of it and it still won't go away. Whether it's about Tom Brady and his connections to Donald Trump. Whether it's about pick your poison with Bill Belichick.
I got a question for you, because you're kind of the anarchist type. Am I wrong in saying that?
I'm a socialist. So I mean,
is there anything about the Patriots that appeal to you as kind of the anarchist team that goes up against Roger Goodell, like the team that is anti-establishment?
Okay, yeah, I mean, there's that angle, but the problem is that it's in service to. I mean, this is the perfect team. Not to get, you know what, I am going to get too political. This is the perfect team for the Donald Trump movement, because it is a pushback against elite, you know, an elite control. In the political case, it would have been neoliberalism. But in this case, it is stuck for the, like, completely wrong, evil reasons, which is, in the case of Donald Trump, fascist resentment. Like, racial resentment, everything else. Like, it's, I'm not saying that they're racist or shit. Oh, God, I stepped in it. But I am saying, like, it's the same themes, and it's in service to a sports town that just, they have just had so much good fortune, so much good stuff, and they just have used all that cachet to have gone from underdog town to, you know, a city of champions to just shit on everyone else. Across their media, across all of their fans, like, I don't feel an ounce of sympathy for Boston. And it's probably because Boston has also now been sold culturally way too much as this, like, you know, white Irish American town, be it through Marky Mark or whoever else, pick your poison, like that. Ryan,
you mess with the wrong city, Chris.
Yeah, that fucking Boston Marathon bombing movie, Patriot Day. I'm still waiting to hear, like, someone really kind of get in depth, break it down. But everything I know about that movie is, like, this feels like propaganda for a very scary line of thought. Like, I just, and that's the problem, because that's Boston. That's Boston in the popular culture. Like, I know it is like Boston itself, from what I've heard from people, it's a nice city. It's actually better than what we know it, but how we know it in the sports world is as this, as it is basically the version of the city that's sold by Marky Mark.
Does that answer your question, Jeremy?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's actually a really kind of smart connection to make both the Patriots and Trump supporters kind of build themselves as anti-establishment, right?
Well, yeah, there were two anti-establishment movements, and it's like, the problem is it doesn't always veer one way, you know? This is kind of the idiotic horseshoe theory that I see some liberals throw around. It's like, oh, if you go too far left or you go too far right, you'll still end up at fascism. No, fascism is a right-wing movement, and it is basically, like, it is a rebellion against kind of this kind of just liberal establishment of, like, capitalism, but it's capitalism in defense of itself. It just rears up and starts biting everything around it. So, I mean, yeah, it's cool that if nothing else, a Patriots win will stick it to Roger Goodell. But at the same time, too, a Patriots win is good for business for the NFL. So it's not really sticking to it. It just makes Roger Goodell look bad in the moment, but they're still going to make bank on the fact that the Patriots, well, might win this game.
I mean, think of the endless ways that they can keep on peddling the Patriots as a dynasty. I mean, that's enough.
Absolutely.
That's enough to fill, like, what, 7-8 hours of NFL Network content alone. So.
Oh yeah, sure. So, I mean, at this point, like, you, like, not to go back to wrestling, Ryan, but, like, this whole thing.
I tried to bring it back to football, and now you're doing this to me.
I'm just using a wrestling term. I'm trying to use a wrestling term.
Sure.
I'm just saying that this Brady Goodell feud feels sometimes, like, I don't think it is, but you can get the sense that sometimes it feels like kayfabe.
Oh, so it's almost kind of like a work shoot.
Yes, yes. It's I'm sorry. Yeah, I used the wrong term there, but yeah.
No. I mean, kayfabe and work shoot are kind of the same thing, but to
sure. Feel like a work shoot. Yeah.
To let people in.
Thank you.
A work in wrestling is when something is fake. A shoot in wrestling is when you're no longer pretending, you're no longer in kayfabe, it's no longer fake, it's actually real. So a worked shoot is something that's supposed to look like it's breaking the script, but it's actually, it's still part of the illusion. So like,
right.
what you're saying, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just saying like in every time in wrestling when a wrestler gets jumped like backstage or something by another wrestler, that is like the quintessential, that is the archetypal work shoot that they try to sell.
Yeah, so, like, what you're essentially saying is that maybe this feud with Brady and Goodell is really all just part of the NFL machine. Like, they're really just trying to sell. Yeah. They're really just trying to sell that there is something there when there really isn't. And I think that's what's put such of, like, a, it's really put far less importance on the actual game itself than we should be. Like, I've seen just a lot of stuff where it's like, oh, Robert Kraft showed up to this press conference that Roger Goodell did, or, oh, like, Brady and whoever won't, like, answer questions about Goodell, and it's putting far less emphasis on the game, and people are already jumping to, like, there's a prop bet that's, oh, will the camera show any of the Patriots high brass, like Kraft or Belichick or even Brady, shaking hands with Goodell? Like, will the camera show that? So, I mean, we've already kind of said, oh, the Patriots are going to win. Like, what about this other storyline that just seems to be much more interesting?
Right. If Atlanta wins, it will throw everyone else off their book, their game, because they don't know what to say about Atlanta. It's all been about the Patriots.
That's why I want Atlanta to win, because I just want the media to be stuck with stupid things. Yeah.
That's why I also like the idea of a Falcons win right there, right. Because that's probably more against this NFL machine than anything, because it fucks up everyone else. They're like, well, what do we talk about now?
Yeah, I bet Deion Sanders probably hasn't even watched a Falcons game.
You are still petty about that.
I am, because he sucks. He's terrible.
All right. Well, why don't we take a quick break and we come back. We're going to keep talking about the Super Bowl and some more stuff. And I don't know, we might actually get into a couple of Lions things, just because we are still a Lions blog, and we should talk about one of the big things that happened this week, so stick around. All right, second part of First Bite here. Just as a word on the first part, I know we didn't talk much of like X's and O's or anything else here, but this isn't a knock on us or anything, but I think you can say the same for all Super Bowl media this week. No one talks about the game. Like, the NFL is such a machine that runs on this kind of drama. Like, I mean, and I know people get mad at us for bringing up wrestling, but that's why I like that as a heuristic, because it cuts to a thing in sports, and that's, again, why I'm really interested in this XFL documentary tonight. Sports are more often than not a masculine soap opera. We don't care. Like, look at the NBA finals the last couple of years. It's never been about the games themselves. It's been about LeBron James and how he handles the pressure or about
Ayesha Curry.
Or Ayesha Curry, or, you know, Steph Curry, or, like, we do this all the time. The narrative is always more important than the game itself. And that's just how sports media works.
Especially when we're talking about an out-of-market team. Like, a lot of us aren't even that interested in the X's and O's of the Falcons and the Patriots, because they're not the Lions. We're not worried about the Falcons' third string or slot cornerbacks or anything like that. I mean, sure, there's some of us that are really in love with the game, myself included, which is why I'm going to spend 3 hours tonight doing On Paper. But at the same time, like, in general, we're talking about a bunch of casual fans that are going to be watching this game, so the narratives are more important.
Right. Like, there are people who haven't watched any football this year who are going to sit down and watch the Super Bowl. And it always has to be marketed towards that. And God help us, this thing's on Fox Sports this year,
too. Oh, no. Which is you had to remind me of that.
Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are the small cell Like, the worst part is I will not be able to sit down and stomach any of that studio crew.
Well, and how many Super Bowl commercials of Undisputed are we going to see?
How many times is Colin Cowherd's dumb face going to be on the television to remind us that he still lives and that he still has a career after saying that baseball isn't an intelligent sport because Dominicans play it?
When is Deion Sanders going to get his own Fox Sports show?
Oh, God. Look at this. Couldn't even get away from it. He plugged it the first segment, how much he hates Deion Sanders, and it's spilling over into the second one. Somebody stop. Stop. We're trying to remove it.
We need to explain a couple things. Yeah, we need to do a couple bit of Lions talk here before we get back to the Super Bowl. The first bit is that right now Jeremy is baboon ass red mad at Deion Sanders because Deion Sanders, quote, oh, go ahead, you do it.
Because for the second straight year, the Lions media feels it's important to get his opinion on the Lions. And Deion Sanders, one, knows nothing about the Lions. Two, just feels the need to trash them because I don't know why, because he's the kind of person that just wants that sort of a negative attention. Last year, he said that Matthew Stafford and Jay Cutler were the same person, which I don't, like, is that analysis? Are you actually making some sort of analysis by saying anything like that? And then this year, I don't know, he said something about how he doesn't watch Lions games because they're not important or something, which...
They don't give me a reason to, is the quote.
And what, is he on NFL Network? Is that where he's at?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So he covers the NFL.
Supposed to.
Okay, and how many teams make the playoffs? 12? So if he were to just limit his scope of the NFL to teams in the playoffs, it would just be 12 out of 32. Not that hard of a job, I would say. But the Lions aren't even on his radar.
And we're also talking about the same Deion Sanders that is a part of the NFL Network and therefore is a part of their Thursday night broadcast, so he might just be salty because nobody watches his show.
Probably. And probably because the thing with sports broadcasters, too, you always have to remember that after a certain amount of time, people forget who the hell you are. None of the young people watching football today has seen Deion Sanders play.
Maybe some of them, because he played until he was ancient. But yeah, I totally get your point. And the interesting thing is that during Deion Sanders' career, everything was about him being known and letting you know who Deion was, because it was Neon Deion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So.
Absolutely. The second thing, too, is, and I know we're kind of getting off the Super Bowl a little bit here, but, I mean, Lions are finally ditching the black, from the sounds of it. It was a new logo, new word mark. We've had our arguments about the word mark stuff. Still a vast improvement in my mind, no matter how you feel about it. But the black outline around the Lions gone, and apparently they are removing the black trim from all of their jerseys.
I'm okay with that.
We did it.
We did it. The era of the 2006 to 2008 or whatever it was finally overturned. Now we just need to get rid of Dan Orlovsky and that other guy who I won't say because I don't actually want to get rid of him. But yeah, I think the uniform change is fine. I don't like the font face, and we just got breaking news during the middle of the podcast that they're going to release 4 new uniforms in April. I don't know. Uniform stuff doesn't really move the needle that much for me. It does for everyone else, apparently. But,
oh, I love that stuff.
Okay.
I think the best... You know what? I gotta think the happiest people in the world, if I was a fan of them, of the Oregon Ducks, where it's kind of like, look, man, I get a new uniform every week.
You like that?
Like, that's gotta be fun. I wouldn't like it as much as the Ducks do it, but I would like new uniforms. Like, I don't know how often. College football's kind of kicked itself into overdrive. Like, they do... Some schools do a lot of new uniforms each week. I mean, each year or so. Like, what is it? Texas A&M now? They're doing that? Like, that just seems fun to... It's fun to get new uniforms. It's not fun to buy them again.
That's the issue I think fans have with it.
But I don't buy a lot of jerseys. I'm not like you guys. I don't buy a lot of fucking jerseys.
Jeremy, you're not allowed to buy jerseys anymore, so...
Yeah, seriously, what the fuck?
And the only jerseys that Chris buys are goddamn patriotic.
Yeah, true goddamn respecting the troops. Honoring and supporting our goddamn troops. Stealing valor on troop respecting.
Salute to service. Anyways, I think that you just don't see a lot of NFL teams switch up their stuff because the ones that you don't switch, or the ones that you don't see switch up their stuff, are the ones who have kind of like the timeless look and like the logo that is pretty
identity,
consistent.
Sure.
Yeah. So I mean, which makes it kind of interesting that the Lions don't switch up their stuff more often than they do.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, like, even the logo, like, I mean, this logo is completely different. Like, you can go into Ford Field, the classic logo's up there. It's the guy running with the lion. That's, like, the 50s logo, and then there was, like, the skinny lion logo of the 60s. And then you kind of got into the outline and everything else, but, I mean, if you want to talk about identity, the logo where they won everything is the one they probably will never use because it's so complex.
Nowadays, logos have to be molded to look like an abstract version of the letter that you are, or something of the other, like, or if you're a basketball logo, you have to have a basketball in it, but,
No, for the NFL, you just have to be menacing. It has to be menacing in some way, even if it's like a pirate flag, it has to be menacing. Everything about them.
I finally noticed that the Atlanta Falcons logo is supposed to look like an F.
F, yeah, yeah.
The Super Bowl is good for some things.
Well, since we talked enough about the Lions jerseys, like, I mean, this is obviously, like, a good move. We like the move, like, across the board. Like, I didn't mind the black, but I can understand, like, the idea of going to a new jersey and going back to silver and blue is...
It's a good move.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, how do you guys feel? Because, I mean, if they say that they're going to have four new uniforms, that has to mean that there are going to be alternates. Jeremy, how do you feel about what a potential alternate uniform could look like?
And I just want to say right here before he takes it, Kyle Mankey's saying that they might not even wear the color rush next year.
Well, yeah, and he's talking about the black color rush from last year. And yeah, that, I mean, if we're getting four new ones, I think the smart money is on your home, your away, maybe a new color rush. Which I would guess is either going to be silver or blue.
What about a Thanksgiving throwback that's just silver helmet?
Yeah. That was going to be my fourth, is a new throwback, which okay. I know is kind of an oxymoronic statement, a new throwback, but that those are the four that I would put my bets on, is home away, new color rush, throwback. Because I know Rod Wood definitely talked about going back to the throwbacks. I don't know if he promised it or not, but he had mentioned it, so I think smart money is you're going to get a new throwback this year. Probably wear it on Thanksgiving.
I think that you guys are probably right. The only thing that I want are blue pants back with the away uniforms.
But we should probably get back to the Super Bowl. What else do we want to talk about from here? Like, I mean, do you want to pick the game? Do you want to talk about the parties? I mean, where are you guys going to be watching this game from?
I'm going to a fairly big gathering. Not my usual Lions viewing place, but a big gathering, potluck type of deal. And,
What are you bringing?
I haven't decided yet. Probably be the lame person just brings beer. But
always bring napkins. You always need more napkins.
I'm not going to be. No, I'm not going to be utensil guy. That's a step below beer guy. Who ends up, like, even if I'm just bringing a six pack for myself, utensils guy is below that guy.
Aluminum foil.
You gotta wrap up the leftovers. How are they going to wrap up the leftovers?
Yeah, bring
Jeremy.
Aluminum foil, no. Man.
Get out of here.
Ryan, what about you? Where are you watching this?
I'm not sure where I'm going to watch it, because last year when I watched it with my family, I should have known that they were all going to vote for one side. And it was really tough being the only person to root for Cam Newton.
Do we have any good Wally stories from that year? No?
No. None that I'm willing to share, because let's just say that by halftime, I left the party to go hang out with my friends and watch the game with them.
Yeah, I wish I could say I'm going over somewhere fun or whatever, but, I mean, I might make some wings here. I actually have a pretty good, like, baked wing, buffalo wing wet recipe if I can get the meat. Although, I mean, each year I worry I'm going to be the one guy who, like, you go out and, like, all the chicken wings are gone. It's finally run out one year.
Yeah, you need to go early. The biggest mistake I've ever made is going to Kroger on Sunday.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's an absolute terror. Like, the 3 days you don't want to go to the grocery store, Christmas Eve, 4th of July, and the Sunday of the Super Bowl. Those are the three days that you want to steer clear of all grocery stores and markets.
Some life tips right there. Tesh tips.
Ryan Lifehack Matthews.
It's my middle name, bitch.
What do you guys, like, have any Super Bowl traditions? Like, Like, are you squares? I love myself some squares. I don't know why. Mostly because I guess I'm not a gambler and that's my one gambling fix. I love me some squares.
What are you talking about?
You don't know squares?
What are you talking about? What is a square? A square, you say
squares
around... Yeah, you say, but I'm just saying, you say squares around gambling, I think of marks. Like, I'm not thinking, like, that's what a square is in gambling. It's a dumb person. Like, what are you talking about?
No, squares for... it's mostly done in the Super Bowl where there's a grid of 10 by 10... A 10 by 10, large square that's fit into 10 by 10 little squares where you pay like a dollar to fill out a square. You just put your name in there. And then after all the squares are filled up by someone's name, you randomly assign numbers to the top and the horizontal and the vertical axis.
X and Y for you math nerds.
Yes,
so
yes.
Wait, is this just zero fucking through nine. Bingo or something? What is it?
Let me fucking finish.
I love the fucking point.
This is peak podcast right now. Jeremy explaining how to set up squares and not just telling Chris what squares are.
So after that's all done, basically the end of the score at the end of the half, or you can do quarters, you take the last digit of the score. So it's 10 to 10, it's 0 and 0. Whoever has that square wins the pot of money.
You can stop already. This is already way too boring for me.
Okay, let me tell you why I don't place...
Wait, I can stop after I'm finished? Thank you for that.
Fucking Christ.
Let me tell you why I don't play squares, because Super Bowl 43... I had the perfect set of numbers right when Arizona scored a touchdown, and the numbers were 0 for the Steelers and 7 for the Cardinals, and then with no time remaining, James Harrison returned a touchdown for 100 yards. An interception returned for 100 yards, and I never played squares ever again since that day.
I've never heard of this in my life, and I'm probably better for it.
I can't believe, like... Usually squares are something that are always like in an email chain or something where they're like, well, my son or my daughter's got a fundraiser and we're looking to make money. So donate some money for squares. Top prize will get some money.
Yeah, no, I have guys who actually we do like full on gambling, like betting pools in our email chains. I think I'm good. Me and Ryan, we've been putting out these prop bets. We're going to probably have the second part either Friday or Saturday for you. Not as funny as the first because it's all like numbers and stuff. Although I do like the Russell Westbrook cross sports prop we got.
It's a pretty good one.
But let's go on to the actual lines and everything. So New England is a 3-point favorite right now on neutral field.
A 3-point line is a don't touch me line. Like I don't even see the point when there's a line of 3 or less why you would ever bet on the line and not just go straight up. Because... What, you're going to pick the Patriots to win, but only win by one or two? That's boring. Just go for the Patriots to win.
No. Patriots, we have to win by more than three.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Who's picking the Patriots to win, but isn't willing to give them 3 points? That's what I'm saying. Or give the Falcons
get better,
3 points.
You get better odds, but, I mean, yeah.
I don't know. This is a toss-up game for me, so I wouldn't touch the line there. If you think the Falcons are going to win, just pick them straight up. Forget about the 3 points.
You'd get a bigger payout, so I totally agree with Jeremy.
Sure, but we're not talking about the money line here.
Right. I know we're not talking about the money line. If we're talking about the spread, which is New England minus 3, I'm going to take New England.
This is a rough one for me. I don't want to do it. I don't want to jinx them, but I believe in Atlanta. Give me them plus 3.
Kiss of death, Chris Lemieux.
Yeah, I know. By the way, I don't think this game is going to stay close. We had another prop is like, you know, will the margin at any point reach more than like 13.5 points? Will it hit a 2-touchdown lead it for any given team at any point? I think that could happen. Like, I don't see this game being like wire to wire close.
I do. I think both these teams are going to play a little conservatively. I know that's not Atlanta's style at all, but to me, this has the feeling of a long, dragged-out game, that I think is just going to like be very slow-paced, very close. I mean, you look at the Patriots, I think they've allowed the fewest points of any team in the league. So if there's a team that can hold the Falcons down for a little bit, it might be the Patriots. And I feel like the Patriots score like 24 points every game. Doesn't matter who they're playing. They score 24, 27 points every single game. So we're going to see a game that's something like 27-24 or something like that. And sure, that's kind of high scoring, but it's not necessarily a game where you're going to see someone go up 21-0 and then a big comeback or anything like that.
I don't even think of that as high scoring anymore. That's kind of more like medium scoring. Like, we've kind of reached this age in the NFL where, like, if I see a pair of 20s, then I'm like, yeah, that just seems like a normal score to me now.
This is what McDonald's did to us, man. This is what McDonald's did to us in the 90s, man. Totally messed us up. We don't know our sizes anymore. What's small? What's medium? What's large? This is all McDonald's fault.
He's saying that, not me. Speaking of the points, though, the total is sitting right now, consensus across Vegas, at 59.
Which is the highest...
Is it?
Ever in Super Bowl history,
really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, the one that it edged out was the Saints and Colts Super Bowl from a while ago. Mm. It was 56.5.
Give me that under. I just basically said why I want that under.
God, it's so... I'm going to take the over. And I'm going to take the over because I think that both teams are just going to score on each other. And I don't think it's going to be a shootout. It's not going to feel like a shootout, but I just feel like it's going to be over 59. And I don't want to root for the under because the people who root for the under are the people who bet on the don't pass line in craps.
I mean,
you're boring. You're boring if you're rooting for the under.
You also get to a point in the game, if it gets into the 50s in the total, you're like, please don't score again. Please don't score again.
Yeah.
And you will always be screwed. Like,
well, yeah, that's why you don't bet in general.
Okay.
You don't want to be
fart
betting
noises,
for some stupid part of the game
noises.
Instead of just a fun game.
A square who plays squares.
Don't talk about something you don't know shit
I'll
about.
Talk shit on that. I'll talk shit on Euchre, too. But.
It's all respect. Wait, what?
Anyway,
you just made two enemies.
No, he just won me back over. Euchre's
boring. Can I give my pick on the total?
Yeah, as long as I don't have to hear from Cali Boy anymore.
I think you're right on going over. I mean, it's a hard sell to get close to 60 points, but, you know, you mentioned going conservative, Jeremy. Like, even if the Falcons go conservative, they've got some good running threats. And the front seven for the Patriots, I mean, we've seen them put up some stinkers before. And to be honest, the Falcons' defense... they've put up some stinkers before, too. Like, there is a good chance if neither defense shows up, you'll hit 60 sitting pretty by the end. And plus, I want to feel good about an over in this game because it will mean a lot of scoring.
Patriots, low-scoring defense. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, law of reversals.
Atlanta Falcons offense, best in the league. Almost 34 points a game.
You want to just kind of leave it there? We done here?
No, we're not done. I found out that Jeremy doesn't like Euchre, and neither do you.
Enjoy the game, everybody. Why is this important?
I don't know. Like, this is we're I know shitting on Euchre is shitting on some real Michigana, but
yeah, I know.
I don't care.
Our next review is going to be shitting on us for that.
Good.
You guys talk about wrestling too much, and you hate Euchre.
Bavada King 69 will rise again from the ashes.
You would not give a one-star review on our podcast.
Who says I'm Bavada King 69?
I think what makes me the most mad about that review is that it brought us to 4.5 stars instead of 5
now.
We're
going to talk about that review next podcast because we need to... I'm going to hold Jeremy's feet to the fire because he tried to antagonize me with it and now he's going to reap the whirlwind. So, but for everyone else, enjoy the game. And we
root for the Falcons.
Root for the Falcons. We did about 50 minutes of this, so this is almost a full-scale podcast. But we'll see you next time.